Before we get started today, I wanted to remind you that the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app. For coverage of the top NFL offseason storylines, tune in to KJZ on ESPN Radio, weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern. Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mehenti will provide insight and analysis as we start the new league year next month and work our way to the draft. KJZ is also available as a podcast after every show. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks sacks are not a quarterback stat and kind of misses his. I'm Mina Kimes. too gross.
No. I love that. That is wonderful. Oh, my gosh.
So to open the kimono a little bit, Dominique and I started taping. I just got sidetracked, and I usually write my intro right before. Yeah, you heard me panicking, and you, I wish you were, we don't see each other, but you could have seen my brain spinning furiously trying to think of something for 30 seconds.
Well, the way that you wrote that in 30 seconds was pretty impressive. Like, it takes me forever. That's why you are the queen of Twitter, because those things come to your mind so quickly, because that was great. And I think it might be the best joke. Does anybody catalog all your
jokes? I'm pretty sure I reused some.
Okay, well, that's number one right now.
I've definitely used Bobby Wagner as Lenny's favorite player. And the reason he's a good segue, and the reason I actually went to the sacks are a QB stat thing, or are a QB stat, was because we've got news out of Seattle with the quarterback who thinks he's been sacked too often. And so, look, you and I are going to talk about the Super Bowl in depth, of course, but it's amazing how much can happen in just 2 days. It's Tuesday. We're taping on Tuesday. And I want to talk to you specifically with the Super Bowl, because I think everyone's now heard the same takes about the Bucs' utter domination with four and some of the adjustments they made. But I want to talk to you a little bit about what the Chiefs did wrong, if anything, how possibly it could have shaken out differently, and specifically what the Bucs' defense did, because I think from your vantage point, that's especially fascinating.
Yeah, and we watched the game, so I got some great answers for you, but okay. They gotta wait.
We'll get to that, and most of the podcast will be about that. But I do want to talk about Wilson, because like generally it feels like this is setting up to be one of the craziest quarterback off seasons in a while, coming off of the Stafford trade, which Jeff and I talked about last week. But also, I don't know, there's just something in the air where I don't know if it's that like it feels like both quarterbacks want out, teams want to move on. Usually nothing happens with franchise quarterbacks, but this year feels a little bit different. For those who don't know, before we get into the Russell Wilson thing, he did an interview on the Dan Patrick Show earlier today where he said he didn't like being sacked so much. He nearly 400 sacks. And, you know, then this prompted much sports television and radio debate about whether that was true, whether he's to blame for the sacks, and whether he should have said any of this in public. So let's start here, Dominique. How do you like, what's your immediate reaction to Russell Wilson even saying this?
Is Russell Wilson's best attempt at being a bad guy? Because I think we all accept the adage, nice guys finish last, like has a lot of truth to it. And if you put like it in a, through a football lens, it's like the nice quarterback doesn't go to the Hall of Fame. I don't know. I don't think on my toes as quickly as you do, but like no one thinks back on your career 20 years after you're done playing and says like, oh, he never won a Super Bowl or he didn't make it to the Pro Bowl. But you know what? He was a good soldier. He did what they wanted all the time. People look back on those careers like John Elway is a perfect example. No one remembers, except for when we bring it up every draft, that he refused to go to Baltimore. No one talks much about Eli forcing his way to out of San Diego and to New York. And no one talks much about Brett Favre being wishy-washy at the end of his career. Like, we don't talk about the jerkiness of our quarterbacks. We talk about how many championships they won, how many MVPs they won, or how many Super Bowls they've gone to. Those are the things we talk about. And I think that some of these players are starting to realize that you got to be the squeaky wheel, because the team do not have your interest in mind all the time. And Aaron Rodgers is the vanguard of that right now.
I think also, also being a quarterback is like such a unique position, because you're not quite labor, you're not quite management. You know what I mean? Like, you're tied to the team for a long time. Like Patrick Mahomes is going to be a Chief in like 2050, you know, and they're seeing that.
The problem is they believe that, what you just said. And that's, I mean, your labor. You're well, a different kind of labor, but your labor.
Yeah, but my point is you're right, but you're also, your interests are not the same. And on top of that, your performance, I mean, all of football performance is really interdependent, but if there's any lesson from the Super Bowl, it's that a quarterback literally cannot play an entire game by himself. That is the only takeaway you should have from that game. Not the only takeaway. We're going to spend like 40 minutes talking about it. But my point is, it does feel like Wilson saw Brady, watched that game. He even said it. He's like, wow, offensive line play really decided that game. And he also saw a quarterback in Tom Brady who went out and got what he wanted and, you know, joined the Monstars or whatever. Now, so I don't know. I don't really want to have like the moral or like, why is he doing this discussion? Because I agree with everything you said. I don't really have any counters, but I do think it's reasonable to criticize Wilson for the lack of accountability he plays in the pressure aspect. Like, as somebody who's watched all 400 or whatever of those sacks, you know, similarly to Deshaun Watson, he takes more sacks than most quarterbacks because he holds on to the football, and it's part of what makes him really special. Now, that doesn't mean Seattle's built a good offensive line around him. Like, both of those things are true. Outside of Dwayne Brown, they've made mistake after mistake in the draft and free agency. Like, I mean, there's a reason why this team gets their butts kicked by the Rams. There's no interior protection. So I'm kind of one of those things where I'm like, yeah, you got a point. You're not entirely being truthful here, but I see why you targeted this specific area as what you'd like to improve.
I don't know if he truly believes it or not. My inclination is that he does, but I don't think it matters. I think he's right in that the Seahawks should have done more and could have done better around him up until this point. If the stats or if the sacks is the stat that he can point to make his point, then that's fine. I don't know that his point is like the sacks itself. Like, I think we agree on that. I think he can complain about game plan and play call, and he can complain about offensive line, but I think you're right. The sacks are also a quarterback stat, and he's responsible for a lot of sacks, but I think that's just like an easy way to communicate the idea that like, I'm not going to let y'all fail me anymore, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they've drafted offensive linemen. And although Damian Lewis, the guard they drafted this year in the second round, I believe, looks good from LSU, had some nice early returns. You know, for the most part, it's not, outside of the Dwayne Brown trade again, like it's been miss after miss. I think last year they did a huge trade for Jamal Adams. Like, if I'm Wilson, I might be like, you know what? Not really sure about the way they're allocating capital and resources, and that's reasonable. All of this said, he's not going anywhere. I mean, if they trade him, it's a $40 million cap hit. And I realize we just saw two teams in Detroit and LA take $22, $23 million dead cap hits to move on from their quarterback. But one, the $40 million is a lot more. Two, they have Russell Wilson. Like, for it, yeah. The only like situation in which it would make sense to me would be if the Seahawks sucked and they were like, all right,
right,
we have a good, which is, I think, what Houston should be considering. And that's where I wanted to go next, Dominique, is ask you if Houston should take a hard look in the mirror and be like, you know what? We suck. Maybe we should just trade Deshaun and maximize our return.
Absolutely think so. And I think it only makes sense to take that cap hit if you are on one extreme or the other, which is why the Lions and the Rams trade made perfect sense.
Yeah, for both sides.
Like,
yeah.
The Rams are like, we're a good quarterback away. We're going to swallow this cap hit and give up all these draft picks because this gets us there. And the Lions are like, we don't care. We kind of are comfortable with stinking for the next couple of years. So go ahead and take this cap hit because it doesn't matter. We don't want to be that good anyway. So it makes sense in those situations. And I think that the Texans are in the latter. Like, they're in that situation.
They're the
and
Lions.
Even if in the Lions situation. Even if I felt like the Texans were even closer, I still would suggest that you probably move on from your quarterback. I don't know Deshaun Watson personally, but I do know how important, as you said earlier in the show, the quarterback is somewhere between labor and management. I was jokingly saying, nah, you just labor, but they do have a bit of a venerated position on the team. You cannot have a successful team if your quarterback is unhappy and doesn't want to be there. Like, you can't succeed. It's no way that works, because they do have some responsibility for setting the tone and the culture of the team and what's acceptable, the intensity of practice, everything, whether the guys believe in their coach or not, whether they respect the coach or not. Like, that's a lot of quarterback or like star player type of responsibility. And like playing with the Ravens, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and Suggs and those guys, they needed to believe in Harbaugh when he got there. They needed to show him that respect, because if they didn't, none of us would. And that's the position that Deshaun Watson is in. So if he comes back and he's like, eh, I want to be here, on top of the fact that you aren't very talented, everyone's going to look at your coaches and your front office like you're trash because your quarterback looks at them that way. So they're really in a no-win situation. The last thing I said, and I'm rambling, but the last thing I'll say is, I know some people think that trading Deshaun Watson would be a dumb decision. In isolation, yes, that's a dumb decision. But in actuality, it's the only thing you can do. The dumb decisions were all the decisions that you made that led you up to a point where Deshaun Watson wants to be traded. You already made the mistake.
Yes, right.
Holding on to him now is sunk cost.
Yeah, yeah. You so, suck. Reckon, admit, no. I love that what your point about the Rams and Lions is so good, because we were getting into today and I kept trying to make the point, like, I think the NFL today, teams are more flexible about cap and drafts than before and whatever. But the Seahawks, there's nothing to gain here. If they were a crappy team, it would be different. And the Texans are a crappy team. And to that end, I actually think they can get out of this with something. The fly in the ointment, gross turn of expression there, turn of phrase, is that Deshaun has the no trade clause. So I almost feel like if I'm Houston, I'm like, hey, bud, let's figure something out, because we know we can get the world for you, but you can also veto stuff. Like, let's get the Jets and Miami bidding against each other, and let's get out of this together, and help us rebuild, and we'll help you go to a good team, and everyone will live happily ever after, except for David Culley, who's probably going to get fired after 1 year because they're going to be so bad, and that's horrible. But I think we're at a point with Houston where it's time to give up and try to work with him to move on, because they suck. It's important in the NFL to like know what your team is and know like how good you actually are, I think.
Can I say two things before you move us on to the next topic? Because you are quite a good host, and I know that you were about to do, and you weren't going to give me a chance to fit in my two thoughts. But one, the first comment I made on the show today, you gave me like two or three solid I've been chasing that high ever since. I've been just giving out takes, hoping that I could get that again. And all I get is like, yeah, yeah. Like, I feel like you understand and you agree. But that first one, I don't know if people need to rewind and listen to it off the top. But you hit me with something strong, and I'm really chasing that from here on out. Last thing, David Culley.
Oh, poor guy.
You think that he knows? You think that he's like 60 plus years old, right? You think he's just like, you know what? I'm gonna go take this cash grab down to Houston. I know this ain't gonna work out. I ain't long for this. I'll get this money and hit the bricks.
The worst one was like Jim Tomsula after Chip Kelly. You remember that? The sacrificial year for Jim Tomsula. This actually strikes me. I mean, geez, Louise, I don't know. Would you do it if a crappy team? Like, nobody, yeah.
At that point in my career, like, David Culley was not going to be an NFL head coach. Like, nothing about his resume suggested that he was on head coach track. Nothing about his complexion suggested he was going to, like, jump the line to head coach. Like, he had never been a coordinator in his many years of coaching. And no disrespect to him, lots of people skip coordinator or spend 1 year coordinator and turn out to be good coaches. But somewhere along the line, I would have thought that he would have gotten his opportunity. So you get to this point that you're near the end of your career and you've accepted whatever dreams you had of being like the greatest coach of all time. You accepted that those things are probably not going to happen. And somebody's like, you know what? We're going to guarantee you like $1 million. You just got to take this job. Got to stink for a few years. And that's fine. Absolutely. I would do that. You wouldn't do that?
I don't know. I would. Yeah. Maybe at that age, nothing to.
I mean, if I'm Eric Bieniemy or Byron Leftwich or some other coach who has options. I said this on TV many times. I would say, hell no, that's a lose-lose, because your first job is to try to convince somebody to stay there. Like, that's not what I signed up for.
Look at you giving me the perfect segue to get to the Super Bowl talk, mentioning two of the coordinators.
Oh, you thought it was a mistake?
You know.
Just, we play with the same brain. We don't know how far we go back.
Let's take a quick break before we get to the Super Bowl. And we're going to talk about the Super Bowl in depth now and sort of some of the lessons from that game.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Wow! All right, Dominic, so you mentioned Eric Bieniemy, who you interviewed, fantastic interview before the game. It's funny because it's like someone on Twitter was like, so now you're going to say Eric Bieniemy was discriminated against? I was like, dude, did you see the coaches on the other sideline? Byron Leftwich didn't even get an interview. Like, we're doing this? Turns out it's not just about one coach. But I do want to talk about the Chiefs offense and how they were stymied by the Bucs defense. Because I think that's by far the most shocking thing about a game. And I want to first start by asking, do you think it should have been shocking? Like, were we stupid to assume that with an offensive line that bad, Patrick Mahomes could overcome it?
Yes. I think we were stupid. I used the analogy that Patrick Mahomes is a drug, and I was high and strung out on that drug.
You picked the Chiefs, right?
Yeah, I picked the Chiefs. Okay, cool. So high and so strung out that things that I knew to be true, I just disregarded them altogether. And that's what happened, because at no point, I remember, I analogize this to the Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl, where I picked the Eagles. I was confident enough to pick the Eagles in their backup quarterback I know that line play matters, and the Eagles had the better offensive and defensive line. The game didn't play out exactly how I expected, but that's something that I can stand by normally. In this game, I abandoned all the things that I had learned and trusted and loved about football and was like, you know what? Nah, this dude is just, he's just something special. And it made me forget that the line play, you can't get anything done without line play on both sides. And no matter how great you are, it's not basketball.
You know why I think so many of us, I mean, the easy explanation is because Patrick Mahomes is the best I've ever seen. And we've seen him make magic. I mean, he almost made some of the craziest football plays I've ever seen in my life in this game. But also, Dominic, I think why people were so wrong is that it's not like the Chiefs, their entire offensive line was wiped out in one incident. He was playing behind backups all season. And it was the final piece, Eric Fisher, but then it wasn't just they took out Eric Fisher and then they had starters of the other. They had to reshuffle again. And I think, if anything, one of my big takeaways is, man, offensive line, it's really interdependent. It's really, communication is so important. And you saw them visibly confused by some of the games Todd Bowles was playing up front, which is four guys, of course. And I think that, to me, it felt like, not that it came out of nowhere, but we had seen them play at a reasonably high level despite having a very embattled offensive line all year.
Yeah, the Pro Football Focus podcast guys made a point that I hadn't thought about that I thought was a good one that I'm going to steal right now, and I'm giving them credit, so it's not full stealing, that they moved Remmers. And I think that the point they were making is that you're better off letting people stay where they're comfortable.
Yes.
Then trying to compensate and move them around, because the point that you just made, it's
offensive
about
linemen always say that, and
continuity.
It buzzes over my head. I'm like, but yeah, it's so true. Yeah.
And they compounded the problem by going from having complete, like, I don't want to say a zero, but like just knowing that you're going to lose this left tackle battle all the time and feeling comfortable-ish on the right, they went from doing that to putting question marks on both sides, which was a problem. But again, it wasn't completely debilitating. There were things that they could have done, but I mean, you're asking a lot for people to change their stripes in the middle of a game like that.
I want to ask you, okay, so let's talk about that. Like, what could they have done? You know what I mean? Like, is there anything offensively that you, because you've seen a lot of people and right. across the board, analysts, folks on Twitter have said, where was the quick game and where were the jet sweeps and screens and RPOs? And upon my third rewatch of the Chiefs offense, I've watched the game twice. I watched the Chiefs offense three times. I have a few thoughts. One of which is they did try that stuff and it sucked. Right, yep. They just sucked at it. I mean, the screen, mm-hmm. these are some of the, like, Andy Reid has the most beautiful screen game in the NFL. And these are some of the grossest screens. It's honestly like a cracked iPhone watching it. you guys are slipping, yeah. miscommunicating. Yeah. The RPOs also, you saw the Bucs do what I hope they would do or encourage them to do last week. Thanks for listening. Which was play the pass more heavily. But also, like, look, this is not the first time everyone's like, wow, Todd Bowles played cover two in quarter. Like, yeah, no shit, right? Everybody thought he would. It's not the first time Kansas City has
seen that.
Yeah. It's like the Russell Wilson thing from the second half of the season. But the problem is usually their answer for that is a hefty dose of Travis Kelce. And one, they were muscling him. Like, they handled him pretty well, David in particular. But two, the protection wasn't even holding up long
that's
enough.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah, it's just
that's
like,
it. So
it's
when crazy.
Football's like, it's about 0.25 second increments. People don't understand that. And if you can't even get that mm-hmm. extra 0.25 second, you're effed.
Yeah. 0.25 seconds is such a long time in football. And I think like the math breaks down to like actually only like 10 or 11 minutes of actual gameplay. The rest of it is like spent between plays. So like, I think when you think of it that way, you understand how important those fractions of a second are in the course of a game. And I think the Kelce thing is interesting because Kelce put up some numbers, but they weren't impactful because drives stalled out for other reasons. And he dropped that big third down conversion when they were backed up, which led to the punt, penalty, re-punt, shank that led to the two penalties that ended up at a touchdown. So you're not the only one who's rewatched this game three times.
You know? It's a brutal drop, by the way. That's the one where you rewatch it and you're like, whoa!
Yeah, that was it, because they had just stopped them at the one, and you're like, all right, we're going this way. I'm not going to use that dreaded word momentum, but like, you're like, all right, this is where the game can change. This is where the game can turn. And that drop stopped it, because that would have changed everything. Like, it took more time off the clock and kicked a deeper punt, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, so many of the answers to the coverages that they were using were slower developing routes. That's the tough part. So like, they were doing a lot of two man, or at least what it turned out to be was two man, but they were really just doubling Kelce and Hill. And when Kelce and Hill were on the same side of the ball, you could have worked the other side of the ball many times. When they were on opposite sides of the ball, it turned into man under two pretty much. And so the move there is like, you can try to get them out of the way and work the opposite side of the ball, or you can have speed crossers and like the variation of routes that work off of that. So if I'm Tyreek Hill, I use Tyreek Hill in this situation. He's fast and quick. You put him in the slot or you put him outside and motion him down, get him a head start and have him sprint to the other side of the field. I think Tony Romo broke this route down against the when they played the Browns in the playoffs. Like, this is what they love to do, that kind of deep over type of thing. So you do that, he can outrun those guys. It doesn't matter if the safety's over top, because you put Kelce on the left side and have Kelce or Mecole Hardman or someone there to clear out that left side. And you do that, and then the variation off of that is you run that way, and then you cut back right. And no one can keep up with Tyreek Hill. I don't care who you are. You can do that in a bunch of different variations of that there. But can you imagine how, even with Tyreek Hill, that takes so much time yeah. to get to that side of the field, and then the counter takes even more time. So I just found myself, every answer I came up with was still reliant on them protecting him. The only answer that I thought of that is not reliant on that O-line pass protecting is a power running game. And yep, when they did do power running attacks, it worked. And the problem with that is they got down by so many points.
So they waited too long. I'm going to say, okay, everybody clear out, clear out.
All right. ISO.
Mina Kimes, straight to camera, Jim Halpert style. They should have run the football more in the first half. Because in the beginning of the second half, they came out and it was really effective. And then there was like that third down where Hardman, by the way, effed up a lot in this game. I mean, I don't want to... The game really, like, there was the Hill, Williams, and Kelsey had the big drops. But for the most part, the Bucs did a really good job of taking Hill and Kelsey out. And, like, no one else stepped up on this football team. But anyways, in the beginning of the second half, that first drive, it was a combination. They Edwards-Hilaire, I think the first run was off the RPO and he gave and he got like, it was a pretty long run. I can't remember if it was 20 yards or something, but that whole drive was like, oh, okay, great. They're still in it. It was 21-9, I think at that point. And they had some in Kelsey, they were getting the ball to him quicker and then it stalled out. And then after that, it was 28-9 and it was like, all right, now they just got to try to get chunk plays and they're effed. Like the game just spun out of hand so quickly. And right, I think they waited too long to run. And I'm almost a little hesitant to say that because we're talking about like not that many drives in the first half, really, because of the way stuff shook out. But I do think that
it's not even, I think you're right. They waited too long, but it's not even about waiting too long as much as to me, it's about the types of runs they've had. And maybe it was, I think it was Devin White, maybe in the post game, who kind of called their offense gimmicky and essentially said that they're soft and said that the Chiefs were soft and the Bucs are a smash mouth football team. I don't buy into that so much, but I went back and looked at all the runs. Once I determined that it would have been nice to run the ball more effectively, especially earlier, I went back and looked at all the early runs and the ones that were straight line. Like they're always in shotgun, so you don't get that type of head start. But the ones that felt like powers or counters that were like straight line, the lineman can push out, they still had success with those. But so many of their runs were perimeter runs, which there's no advantage to doing that because that gives the safeties time to get involved in the running attack. So if you go right at them, the safeties, because they never had, well, that's not true. They did a few cover three looks that they made look different off the start, but so rarely did they have an extra safety in the box. You should be able to get 5 yards before anybody touches you if you don't have a safety in the box and you have serviceable offensive linemen, which those guys weren't off the street completely. They were serviceable. So that was also a concern. It wasn't that they waited too long. It was that they were doing these kind of sideline soft runs that don't take advantage of the defense.
The Bucs had a too high safety shell on 87%. Snaps. Tyreek Hill made a comment after where he was like, yeah, we thought they would play more man and single high. Really? Really?
Huh?
Like, I guess that's what befuddles me. Like, again, on one hand, I want to say a lot of the stuff we're asking the Chiefs to do, they actually did try or they would not have had success because the protection was that bad. But on the other hand, I hear a comment like that and I'm like, you really thought Todd Bowles would learn zero lessons from the last game? Like, he made some of those adjustments in week 12. Every single show, people were like, they're going to play more zone and too high. Like, or, you know
this better than most because your experience with the Seahawks is that there are two different types of teams. There are do what we do type of teams, and then there are game plan type of teams. And the Seahawks have always been, or until recently, have always been a kind of do what we do type of team. But the Bucs, to me, don't seem, I don't know why you would assume that headed into the Super Bowl after what happened last time. Like, that seems like a ridiculous assumption. I'm going to assume that Tyreek Hill just ain't know what else to say.
I mean, I will say, like, Todd Bowles, he broke every tendency he has. I mean, on both sides of football, and we'll get to the Bucs offense in a second versus the Chiefs defense, but that's the lowest blitz rate by a Bowles defense in 5 years. I mean, like, that's pretty cool. I cannot stress enough how impressive the Bucs performance was from a coaching perspective and execution perspective. Because, like, just the stuff they did up front. Like, I'm not a defensive line expert, but like, it was wild. Like, did you have Vita Vea lined up at defensive end on your bingo card? The thing they did where they would loop Barrett around to contain Mahomes using Olaf, that was so cool. And they did so many different things. Like the Rodgers was just coming from every possible alignment. It was so neat.
So those were the things that I was most impressed with from the coaching, because I think the coverages were not like revolutionary. The concept was something I thought of the first time I saw the Chiefs play football, was like, let's get guys deep. Like, that was not revolutionary. The things that I thought were special was them understanding that the best offense for the Chiefs is not Andy Reid's design. Honestly, like, the most explosive plays, if you think about your Patrick Mahomes memories, those are him like creating outside the pocket and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce breaking down the field. And we saw one of those passes hit, we saw several of these passes hit people and drop them. I'm thinking of the Kelce one. Yeah, I'm thinking of Kelce one right now where he was rolling right and Kelce broke to the right sideline, like through the middle of the field, and it hit him, but it was a little slow, so the guy broke it up. So like, those are the plays we remember, is him crossing, throwing across his body and doing that sort of stuff. The way that they modified their scramble rules and stuck to those scramble rules and were completely comfortable with those scramble rules, even when Mahomes was running for first downs of big games early in the game, like, that to me is coaching. That's like, look, this is going to happen. We're going to, like, we'll live to fight another day. Don't try to be a hero.
I mean, but football, it's like, it is math. Like, if you have four human beings who can consistently get the quarterback moving in less than 2.5 seconds, that makes your life a lot easier as a linebacker trying to cover, like, or the various Bucs DBs. I know you're saying about the rule, like, the fact that Mahomes almost pulled off those plays, I think it does raise the question, and we'll wrap up this side of the ball here. From the Chiefs' perspective, I know you and I said, yeah, they should have run the football more, but, like, given the state of your offensive line, is it a better move to just really try to stick to quick stuff, and they did try some of it, contrary to public perception? Or do you think, like, listen, it's Patrick Mahomes, let's just pray that he can make magic happen, which he almost did?
I mean, honestly, praying that Patrick Mahomes makes magic happens feels like more of a certainty than anything else that you could have done. So, like, it's hard to begrudge them hoping that Patrick makes magic happen. But I do think that they could have done some more to help him to anticipate what was going to happen. I think they had some success with a couple of gadgety type of plays, like that Tyreek Hill, when they were backed up, they hit Tyreek Hill on what seemed like a weird little screen play that was successful.
No, that's one of the best plays of the game. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
like that seemed like that play was designed to go against this defense. And to your point, they should have stuck with the screen passes, because two man, the screen pass doesn't work necessarily, but when they were in those zones, screen pass is tremendous against the zone. I remember one getting batted down and then one getting, like, completely just blown up. But then they were like, all right, we're done with screen passes. That's not going to work.
After the first, there were a few gross ones. Yeah. But you're right. They were playing a lot of quarters. And
the screen would kill that. And they were playing like a special quarters too, where their underneath defenders were buzzing to Hill and Kelce. Mm-hmm. So, like, understanding that those guys are decoys, like, that's something that it felt like they still wanted to have big games for those guys, and that wasn't going to happen. And Mecole Hardman isn't Tyreek Hill, but he's a reasonable facsimile. Like, he's fast enough that if you are going to double cover Tyreek Hill, I love the matchup of Mecole Hardman versus anybody with Patrick Mahomes throwing it. We're going to eat. And they didn't do that.
And generally, is quarters versus the Chiefs where the safety can cut, like, do you think that's a good approach against this team? Or I guess it's so hard to, like, if anything, I think the blueprint, if you're going to take a blueprint away, it's on the other side of the ball, which we're about to get to, playing the Chiefs defense. Like, I'm not sure how much you can really take away. Like, teams did do what we just saw. Teams did this to the Chiefs. I mean, shoot, they ran the ball on Buffalo. I don't know why they didn't do it more in this game, but
they weren't playing true coverages in many cases. So, like, they were not, their safeties weren't playing true quarters rules. You could see that in how they were reacting to like the meager play fakes. Like quarters is a great defense in part because it can be good against the run if the safeties have good run pass reads, and it can also be great against the pass if the safeties have good run pass reads. They were not doing run pass reads when they played quarters. They were like, look, this is a different type of quarters. This is a true quarters. And to the point I was making earlier, Kelce and Hill were who they were focusing on. So yes. If you go rewatch the game for the 15th time, Mina, and look at the passes. Like there was one in the second half, I think, to Sammy Watkins. He was so wide open. Like anybody not named Kelce or Hill, like it felt like they were not contesting those passes. So it was a game plan specifically designed to like force somebody else to beat him and force Patrick Mahomes to hold onto the ball. And there was not enough plays, I guess, or enough opportunities where he created his own time because he was his best blocker on Sunday, yeah. Unfortunately. I mean, he did some crazy stuff.
It's not like he was overlooking wide open guy. Like, I think there's a bit of, in the fourth quarter he was, because again, they were down so much and, you know, they were trying to get the chunk plays. But in the first three quarters, like when you go back and watch, like there's not many plays where you're like, oh, look, the Hardman or Williams or whatever open and could get a first down. And even on the ones where he's like a little bit late to the check down, it's because it's later in his progression. And by good.
But I'm sorry. I know you want to move on, but I feel like part of that is play design.
Yeah.
That part of that was coming to the, yeah. It's like, not
what
that,
were they thinking?
Yeah.
How did they think
it's
he would
not
have,
that they, yeah. Because when they started to put Kelce and Hill on the same side, that other side felt open. It was just like, to me, at least it felt like it wasn't.
Those
about,
guys weren't winning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. And it wasn't about like they said, weren't winning because they weren't the first reads. And that's a hard thing to do when you have Kelce and Hill on your team to be like, you know what? The primary on this is Sammy Watkins. But had they done that sooner, like that
that's
wasn't
a good point.
If they, you know what I mean? Like if they decided
yeah, like
early
once
on,
they had realized like earlier half, that, yeah, okay, they're gonna play a ton of split safety coverages and use the safety.
There was this one specific play that I can send to you after this because I know you care this much about it, where they put Hill and Kelce on the same side and Sammy Watkins ran a curl. He was I can look up the next gen stats. I would guess that there was no one within 5 yards.
I know exactly the play you're talking about.
Yeah.
He's a little bit short. I mean, I don't know if he would have picked up the first down if it's the one I'm thinking of.
Maybe, but I don't know. It just felt to me that, and maybe that's why he was that open because it was third down. But I just noticed that more and more often that it was clear by halftime that they decided that Kelce and Hill were.
There's a couple
to be
plays
stopped.
Too where I thought Williams was in the same situation, but you're right.
Yeah,
like
they
I
just
think
ignored him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the
so tired. I feel like
Todd Bowles outcoached Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid on that side of the ball pretty thoroughly. Let's talk about the other side of the football. Let's take a quick break.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow, MINASHOW.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So, Dominique, I was so effing impressed by Byron Leftwich in this game. I mean, let's start with a stat. I tweeted this because I forget. Somebody was saying, like, well, did you watch the
book? Are you sure it's Byron Leftwich or was it Tubb?
Oh,
or
man.
Was it Keith Armstrong?
It's hard to determine.
I don't know. so many.
yeah, so many. And yet, Byron Todd
Wolf. I feel like you explained the joke. You said it's hard to keep track. People might take that the wrong way.
Sorry. One of their – some reporter, after the game, Byron was doing a press conference, and he asked him about defending the Chiefs' offense. And it was extremely awkward. Not only because they look nothing alike, but they're like, I would say, like, I'm trying to think of a comp, like Diana Rossini and I, maybe like makeup wise is like the difference in tone we're talking about. Like, I mean, I guess it's a Zoom. Yeah,
it's
like,
not even close.
Have you never seen these human beings before? Probably not. Okay. Stat I thought was incredible. During the regular season, Brady's average depth of target was 8.8 yards, which is second in the NFL. Pretty typical for a Bruce Arians offense. In this football game, it was 5.9, which would have been the lowest in the league. He got the football out faster than he ever has. I think like ever, maybe. Certainly this season, it was like 2.17 seconds or something stupid. Basically, the Bucs looked at the Chiefs and said, "Oh, you like to blitz a lot, and you're good at defending wide receivers. All right, we're just gonna do everything else." Brilliant. I mean, like, I don't know. It's like, it's silly. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like, they literally just targeted every single one of the Chiefs' weaknesses. Oh, Daniel Sorensen? Ooh, sorry. Oh, your linebackers can't cover and you're not really bad at run defense? All right, here we go. I mean, it was just amazing.
Yeah. So it's not in isolation, you know? So like the score and the way that the defense shut down the Chiefs' offense, like, really helped the Bucs' defense, forcing them to be one-dimensional. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or excuse me, really help the Bucs offense.
Oh, I know you, yeah.
It gave the Bucs the opportunity to be two-dimensional, which allows the play action and whatever, all that stuff.
Take their time. And yeah, I mean, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're right. They looked at the Chiefs and they were like, all right, we're going to attack you where you're weak. And I think that...
Bold strategy.
Yeah, is it hubris that the Chiefs were showing and not doing the same thing, which is fair. It's been, what, three seasons where functionally no one's ever really stopped them. I guess the Falcons are the only team that's really slowed them down in this three-year stretch. So maybe it's hubris, or maybe it's just like dance with the one that brought you. But I think the Bucs had the foresight and the humility to be like, all right, let's attack their weaknesses. And they had the lead, which allowed them to be two-dimensional, because I'm not sure how differently this game plays out if it's close. Like, there's a different game plan. There's a different pressure on that offense to create in those situations, and the penalties too.
That's a good point. Cause, you know, on one hand, I'm like, well, this is how you should play the Chiefs defense, guys. You should run the football and, you know, use a lot of play action and count on getting yards after the catch. I mean, the average Bucs receiver had I wrote this down somewhere. It's crazy. Like 4 yards of separation, something stupid. Mm. So yeah, it's play action, folks. It works. Brady was 10 for 13 off of play action. And he averaged 10.4 yards off play action, 6 without.
I don't even think he ran that many dropbacks. If I remember correctly, the first half was like 2 dropbacks. Everything else was run or play action.
The other thing is, 4 yards of separation at Brady's targets, which, I mean, if you take away Antonio Brown, the wide receivers had 3 catches in this game, which, like, Mike Evans, like, was kind of blanked by Bashaud Breeland the last time they played. And the Bucs, again, they learned. Like, I'm not convinced they win if they hadn't played in week 12, because they took every possible correct lesson from that game, even with the Chiefs line. And by the way, that Evans, he did have that one big 31-yard catch, which was one of the various situations where the Chiefs were in base. They were in base defense a lot in this game, whereas they only had one snap in base defense the first time these teams played. The Bucs said, we are going to put every offensive lineman we have on the field. We are going to put both of our tight ends on, and we are going to get these safeties and linebackers covering, and by golly, it's our advantage. I mean, The other thing, there was another play where
you hit me with a body. Yeah, that is that made me uncomfortable.
This other play, I've been spending too much time with people from the South, NFL Live. Dude, I started thinking in Marcus Spears' voice. By golly is a Laura, but she does golly. But I know I've been saying y'all around the house. My husband's like, what the hell is happening here? No, but there was a play where first of all, there were so many plays, whether it was the slide route to Gronk, or there was like a pop pass. The one I'm thinking of though is it was to Brait, and the Chiefs were in base yet again. And he used Gronk to hold Matthew. And do you remember the play? It's a little screen to Gronk. So, and I tweeted the next gen stats. And Orlovsky pointed out, like, that's a Patriots play. And I was like, holy shit, they just ran the Patriots offense, didn't they? Like, exactly. Yeah. I mean, shoot.
That's what it looked like.
A lot of the plays.
The first series did not look like the Patriots. Every other series kind of looked like the Patriots, with exception of that tight end screen, which I'm sure the Patriots ran at some point, but that felt like something that the Bucs put into the offense earlier in the season, that Brait screen, that big play. But yeah, that it felt like very Patriots, which is, it's fine because I know that you say that sacks is a quarterback stat, and that's true, and wins is not a quarterback stat. I don't think that it could ever be more truer than the games that we saw throughout these particular playoffs. Oh. Like Tom Brady is the GOAT, but
he was fine.
He was fine.
It wasn't like the Manning Super Bowl where they had, you know,
dropped. Oh, yeah.
He played well. I mean, shoot, that there was a touchdown that one of the touchdowns, it was the maybe the whip route to AB that I'm thinking of. No, it was the second touchdown to Gronk where I was like, that was a laser. He looked good. He was decisive. He did everything you have to do to beat the Chiefs defense. But yeah, like, you know, he shouldn't have been MVP. But Barnwell and I both chose Shaq Barrett. Do you think that's the right pick?
That's what I picked before the game. I said, Shaq Barrett will be the MVP.
You knew they wouldn't give it to him, though. Come on.
Yeah, of course not. I know better. But I mean, it's every Super Bowl, they give it to the wrong person because they give it to a quarterback every time. It should be a defender.
Except for Malcolm Smith, Seahawks Super Bowl MVP.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that. What team? How did Russell Wilson let that happen? I was at that Super Bowl.
Going public with his invest in the offensive line demands. Russell Wilson was a different time.
A long time ago.
How about Gronk, man? I mean, I tweeted this. I didn't say it. My highest take is like the GOAT debate. Patrick Mahomes still has a lot of years left, right? So I'm not going to close the door on that. I mean, Brady will be really hard to catch because of the Super Bowls, whatever. But I kind of walked away from this game thinking Kelce will never catch Gronk.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's right. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
I think Gronk won. Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't know that. I don't know that this game decided it necessarily. But I mean, if you could have a draft, and I guess draft isn't the same as greatest, because I think in a draft, most people would choose Patrick Mahomes at his peak over Brady at his peak. But I don't think there's any comparison to Gronk and Kelce, because Gronk is so versatile that he can have an offense built entirely around him in a way that I don't think Kelce can. And I think Kelce's great, but I think Kelce is great in this situation. There is a potential, like, foreseeable situation where Kelce is good. I don't think Gronk goes anywhere and isn't great, because Gronk is so exceptional at every facet of the position. Like, he is the prototype. He's an enormous, strong guy who can also run routes like a receiver. Kelce is a guy who can run routes better than Gronk, but all the other stuff, like, I feel like there's no comparison.
Byron Leftwich really used Gronk the entire effing season as a blocker. And then in the biggest game of the year, flipped the switch. It's like the same with like the play action, going from 18% before the bye to 43% in this game. Like, that is, people talk about Brady bringing the Patriots way to Tampa. Of course, we don't engage in that sort of nonsense on this podcast, but that was the most Patriots-like thing about this Super Bowl, is that the Bucs freaking changed it up. Like, that, to me, in some ways, it reminds me a lot of the Rams-Pats Super Bowl, the 13-3 game, where it was kind of like, this game sucks. But then you watch it and you're like, whoa, the coaches did all this kind of crazy cool stuff and changed their tendencies. And like, that's how I felt watching this game. Like, the Bucks coaches, Arians, Leftwich, Bowles, you're the real MVPs.
it's a rewatch Super Bowl for sure, and to appreciate all the things that happened. But can we go back to the base thing for a second? Is Juan Thornhill not fully back from his?
I don't know, like, because he was so knee. Good, dude. He was so because good in the AFC championship, though.
Because this defense is so different when you take Sorensen out and put Thornhill in. Like, that really hurts this defense's flexibility. And he was good in that game, and I expected him to be in base. I don't completely understand, because I've been really impressed with him since before he got hurt, and really impressed since he's come back. And I thought he was going to be a difference maker for them defensively. And I don't know, he's just not out there enough for me. And maybe I tore my ACL and I was never the same. So maybe
I think that's
he is still working his way back.
Well, that's a good setup to what I wanted to talk about last, which is these two teams moving forward. So let's start with the Chiefs. You know, the assumption is they'll be the best team in the NFL. They'll have a functional offensive line. Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. And they don't have a ton of free agents. And, you know, but on defense, there are some problems, I think. You made a really smart point about how the Bucs, because of the game script, were really comfortable. And the game script enabled them to run perfect offense against Kansas City. But if you're Kansas City, do you look at linebacker, potentially safety, edge rusher? Frank Clark was like a total nothing burger in this game. Like, do you look at those positions and try to maybe go there instead of spending your first round draft pick on a running back this year?
Yeah, I think that was really bad.
Not good.
That first round draft pick like looks really bad today. And maybe if they had run the ball, it looks really good. But it feels to me like they can't go wrong, honestly. And I hate talking about needs as much as talking about players. And I haven't done the deep dive into the college players enough to know who to get. But my belief, and I know this is like cliche at this point, is like you draft for the talent that's there, not for the need. Because like I'd be fine with them getting a D lineman if that D lineman was a difference maker. Like I'm fine with you getting a linebacker if he's a difference maker. Get a corner or a safety if he's a difference maker. Like you build your defense around the talent that's available. So best case scenario, an all-pro linebacker is available for them, but don't reach for a linebacker if that's not who's there. Like I think this defense is in a position where, or this team is in a position where as long as Patrick Mahomes is there, that they are within championship striking distance. And that is more important to me. Like I'm fine with building a team that's heavy in one spot. So like if you build an incredible defensive line, that's fine. You can tilt coverages or do whatever you need to do to protect the other people. I would hate to get a player who is less impactful just because you have a hole. Like I think that's a trap that teams can and do fall into.
Dominic, the Chiefs have shown a willingness to do what you describe. I mean, this is a team that was linked with Henry Ruggs in the draft last year, which struck everybody as redundant, but then you watch a game like the Super Bowl and you're reminded of the fact that you never know what your team will need. Maybe Henry Ruggs is the difference because he's the third guy who gets open when they cover Hill and Kelsey. But I would encourage people when thinking about the Chiefs more broadly, don't read too much into a game where your offensive line was, you know, like pulled off the street. So on the Bucs side, I want to ask you this. Are they the best team in the NFC next year? I struggled with this myself.
Yeah, I mean, my inclination is to say no. Is that fair? Yeah, I mean, Packers, I love the Rams defense, which I know defense is not as consistently replicable as offense is, but they've gotten better on offense.
I like it when you begrudgingly admit like analytical type points, even though you hate them. That's a great
one. I don't
one.
Hate analytics.
The no, thing but I feel the look in your face. People can't see that when he said that, he looked so angry.
Let me turn this camera off. The thing is, of former football player jock guys, I feel like I am one of the most, if not the most, analytically inclined. But you nerds think that there is nothing more to football than stats and numbers, and you need
dots.
To understand
don't
that there's
dots.
More to it than, oh yeah, my bad. There's more to it than dots and numbers. So, yeah, I do understand and I accept that defense is not replicable, but that defense is outstanding. And I don't think losing Brandon Staley is going to change that. So I like the Rams with the addition of Matt Stafford. I think the NFC is a lot closer, or the NFC feels like it is more up for grabs than the AFC. Like it didn't feel like anybody in the AFC can recreate what the Buccaneers did. I still lean Mahomes and AFC. The NFC, I feel like it's
wide open.
Just about anybody, right?
Yeah, the Bucs have a lot of free agents, a lot of good, important free agents. Godwin, Barrett, David, Levante David. The list is long there, but they've got cap space, like about $40 million. I think the focus on Barrett and David, I think they'll let Godwin walk, personally. Hello, Baltimore, if you're there. Why I like them is they've got the offense figured it out at the end of the freaking season. So, and they keep their offensive line and they get to keep their coaches. So I just like the continuity there. I agree with you. I think it's really close between the Bucs, Packers, and Rams, but we'll see. We'll see how. Okay. All right.
Poor Saints. That window shut right on them. What bad call, Minnesota miracle. And a bunch of other stuff, and they got shellacked. That window just shut on their fingers.
I will say, like, I still feel like some crazy stuff's going to go down with the quarterbacks over the next month, so I'm not ready to make any season predictions yet. As always, we're wrapping with Dinks and Dunks, which is presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app. Download the DraftKings app today and use code MENA to get in on all of the action.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Dominique, my first question, the most important. Have you seen the cat lawyer video? And is it the funniest video of the year?
It's phenomenal.
What's your favorite part? Let me adjust it. What's your favorite part?
Obviously, is when he said, I'm not a cat.
Really? Because my favorite, people who haven't seen it, there's like a court hearing, I guess, which is, it's been an amazing year between the judge who got hit on by the prisoner.
Oh. She was interested. I don't care what nobody said. She was interested.
You saw what I said. I saw that smile. But there's a court hearing, and it's like a judge, two lawyers, one lawyer, and then another lawyer who forgot to change his Zoom filter, and it's like a cat that moves its mouth when he talks and makes facial expressions. And my favorite part is not when he says, "I am not a cat," but when he says he can't figure out how to change it. So he said, I'm ready to move forward as the cat. Love that part. I need to figure out how to do these filters, though.
Yeah, I don't know. That seems like that's a Zoom premium function. So how does that happen, though? Like, he sounded like he was too old to have young children. So was that a prank? What's going on?
I don't know. I was worried it was a setup, but then the guy who posted it, David Gardner, linked to an article where it was not a setup. It's like an old lawyer dude who is... Yeah, it's real, which is great.
But one of the old lawyers is on it off the top. He's like, "I believe you have a filter." Like he's
the other one is pissed, but then he kind of smiles at the end. I don't know. Question two. I gotta figure out how to do that on my phone so I can start calling you and doing that cat face. Question two. How would you rank the weekend halftime performance on a scale of 1 through 10?
I don't know, 1 and 10 at the same time. I'm not a halftime performance guy. Like it was fine. It was
like people care too much.
I don't know. I'm not going to judge other people for caring that much. I'm not a fan of The Weeknd. And the halftime show is so rarely is it somebody that I care much about. So, like, it has to be really special. There were no guests, like, appearances. I understand, like, the COVID restrictions and all that. So, they adhere to all of that. But I don't know. I guess it was fine. It didn't move me, but I didn't think it was terrible. The audio seemed bad at first, and then it got better. I want to be a halftime guy, but, like, until they start putting washed up rappers in there, they're not going to get me excited.
I liked it.
Do you like The Weeknd?
I do like The Weeknd. And I also thought I liked the set, the staging of it. I thought it was made for television. And I thought it was cool. Okay. That's fine. I don't really want to, like, you clearly don't have strong takes about this. So.
I can't kill my face when I'm with you.
Oh, Lenny, stop. Okay. Question number three. Oh my God, this fool. Another quarterback that has been linked to the trade market or potentially could be on the block is Derek Carr. Would you rather have Derek Carr or Carson Wentz?
Oh, that's a good one.
Because I feel like that's a floor versus upside play.
Yeah, that is it.
So Derek Carr, your floor is obviously higher. Carson right. Wentz, the floor, we have seen it. The floor is it's magma, but yeah. You have that tantalizing, 2017 season.
Yeah. So my first response is it depends on the team, but if we are going like team agnostic, then I go Carson Wentz. Like I'd rather.
Wow, really?
I'd rather shoot for the moon.
Woohoo! Like, I did not see that coming out of you.
Yeah, it's curveball. Curveball. You think it's just curveball. because I seem adamantly opposed to Wentz because he is always, or at least he used to be, in opposition to Dak Prescott, someone who was perpetually underappreciated. I don't hate Carson Wentz. Like, he's fine. I just hate when people try to act like him and Dak Prescott are in the same conversation. Stop.
Man, we did that on NFL Live today. And because the prop, the fig leaf of a premise that we used to have the conversation was the Cowboys dropping a hype video without Dak Prescott. And then some poor social media person was like, I'm 19. Oh, Lord. I love it. But Dan was down to tango, so we got into it a little bit.
He's not still like Wentz is better than Dak, right? He stopped that.
He used Wentz's contract example of why the Cowboys should be wary of signing Dak to a long-term deal, and you could see that emoji where the guy's head explodes.
Oh yes,
that's what my face did on screen, and
absurd.
I know. I'm still honestly, I still have sweat marks from how heated I got. All right, question number four. You know what? I'm tired of talking about football. Can you give a quarantine content recommendation? You always have good ones.
Sure. So if you don't mind, well, actually, subtitles are gone. So on Netflix, they used to have a show called Gomorra, Italian mafia
show.
It used to have subtitles, but now it's on HBO Max, and they have like some wonky voiceovers that you'll get used to. It doesn't bother.
I like subtitles.
It's a phenomenal show. Yeah, so you can put it on subtitles and ignore the voiceovers.
This is
you would, nerd.
This is one of my favorite and least favorite things about Dominique is like he does not do like kind small talk in like so when he was describing the show to me via text, I was like, oh, it sounds a little bit like so it's about Italian crime family. I was like, sounds a little bit like Narcos. And he just wrote back, no. Just not even like not really. No.
No, it's no. It's not
just the word no. I just want to imagine. So, you're like, oh, okay, a couple friends having a conversational moment. Oh, this sounds like another show. I like, no.
I told you this several times, is that there's a lot going on in this house, Mina. I got to get straight to the point. I if you want to have a conversation, can talk on the phone. But I can't have my face in my phone when my son's trying to burn this whole place down.
I don't want to talk on the phone. Literally, no one under the age of
45
wants
to talk on the phone either, Mina. I don't want to talk on the phone either, Mina. But you need to understand that there is kindness. You know by now that there is kindness in my no. I don't have to explain that to you. Anyway, Gomorra, it's not like Narcos because Narcos is cops versus criminals. Gomorra is criminals versus criminals.
Mm.
And it's much better than Narcos. So watch the first season. If you don't love it, I apologize. I'm on the third season right now and I love it.
I mean, what did you just say? There's kindness in my no. Can we get a drop of that for every time Dominique enters? Last question. As always, comes from Lenny. He's checking out your Twitter. You know, he likes to peruse it from time to time. And he noticed that your pinned tweet is praise you received in 2016. And he just wants to know, you really haven't done anything since then?
Lenny.